Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio.
The Donalana Kitchen Show is sponsored in part by the Mucky Duck Pub, where pub means community. More information can be found at www.themuckyduckpub.com or from Marcus at telephone number 232-8888.
Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We gather here once a week at the studios of KHOI Community Radio in downtown Ames, Iowa. We talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. So today, I think we can logically and most appropriately talk about the lack of rain and the fact that somebody better be doing a rain dance out there because my garden is really dry. I figure the garden is really dry when I have to water the okra plants that are coming up. I mean, if the okra is looking like it's coughing and sputtering, heaven knows. Well, this is a good year to celebrate mulch and keeping things really, keeping that moisture in the ground that you do have.
And it does look like we are going to have a drought summer.
Oh, boy. This is going to be a challenge. A challenge.
Well, we did get mosquitoes this week, finally. They're really late, and I was really glad. But now when I'm out watering at sunset, I get mosquito bites. So,
well, there are some things that are still going along as they are supposed to. Oh, dear. Well, I'm glad people like you are the mosquito meters for
I'm the mosquito radar.
Okay. So.
But they're not as bad as usual. I guess that's a consequence of less water. There is a relationship there.
There we go.
Mosquitoes love water. Mosquitoes breed in water. Therefore, less water, slightly less mosquitoes.
So I don't know what the bats and the bugs and the bats and the birds are going to be eating, but we wish them, actually, this time of year, I would take more mosquitoes with a little rain. That would be good. Well, tick-a-tick-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick. Here we have it. We haven't had a news item from the Donalana Kitchen ticker tape in a long time. Here is a news item. A new royal or semi-royal addition to the Meghan and Harry story. Meghan and Harry had a new baby. Oh, boy.
In America.
There you go. It'll be down in the history books. New baby, a baby girl. Congratulations to them. Named after the queen, as well they should. Lilibet Diana. So there's some historical connections.
More spring babies, spring lambs, spring.
Oh, new life. That's good. I'm glad they have a new baby. So congratulations to those good folks over there.
All the new babies.
Ha! Well, we share the earth with plants. Each plant has its own story. Blossoms, roots, leaves, and fruits have been sustaining and healing us for generations. Indigenous Americans reference fauna and flora as people, as a people. Through this lens, our paradigm shift. We can think of things in a new way. Considering our plant neighbors as a people requires a different type of relationship, one of reciprocity and respect, and the necessary mindset to see the reciprocity as we tend to each other. Yes, plants have been tending to us for a long time. And as a gardener, as a farmer, we think, oh, we're taking care of things out there. But the plants have been doing things for us for a long, long time.
Unfortunately, they kind of do some of it all on their own.
Oh, they are. So let's take a look at some of the helpful plants around us.
One thing with medicinal, herbs are often divided into medicinal and culinary. It's not a hard and fast distinction as far as I'm concerned. Mostly the culinary herbs are ones that are grown because they taste good. And sometimes medicinal plants, they don't necessarily, That's why you have to have a spoonful of sugar to make the medicine go down. Some of them taste really nasty, but are quite effective. But the thing is, in common, is all of these plants have nutritive qualities. For example, if you're making a pasta and you put in a lot of fresh herbs, that's a vegetable. You're adding vegetative matter and nutrition to your pasta. If you're using lots of parsley or lots of chives or lots of basil, it's good for you. It's nourishing. Not only does it taste good, it's nourishing. And a lot of the quote medicinal kinds of plants also nourish in different ways through their chemical constituents. There are tonic herbs, which are kind of builders, and you maybe drink a cup of something with, you know, like clover tea, for example. Mm-hmm. It's notorious as a blood cleanser, whatever that means. But it's just kind of good for you, and it builds you up over time. It's in the same way good, healthy food builds you up. And then there are other herbs that have much more immediate effects, like, for example, red raspberry leaf is an old herbal use that women, it's called a women's tonic herb, and it's really good for, like, when you have menstrual complaints, you know, you don't feel good. Raspberry tea immediately helps soothe a lot of those things. It's something simple. It's something available. You can use it in the dried form. Or if you have raspberry plants, you just go out and pick the leaves and steep them in some warm water. You know, there are the tonic herbs, which are long-term builders in that tradition. And then there are the sort of immediate first aid remedies, for example.
Right, right. And this is raspberries, right? You know, those prickly sort of canes that come out. And we recognize it when the raspberries come out. Now, raspberries also come in black raspberry. And actually, there are golden raspberry cultivars. Now, this, according to what I've read, it's just the red raspberry that
it's the traditional one. Now, the other thing that we have to know is, you know, of course, all cultures had a medicinal history of plant use all over the world. Different, you know, like there's a long history of Chinese herbs. And one of the things that is happening in pharmaceutical companies is because native plants cannot be patented, right?
Aha.
Right? That means they can't lock up a monopoly and create some expensive product. But there are many instances of something called biopiracy, where large pharmaceutical companies have basically taken indigenous cultural plants and broken down their constituents into the straight chemicals that they could then patent and turn into expensive medicines. For example, aspirin started with salicylic acid, which is from willow bark. That is a non-patented.
Yeah, I don't know how old I had to be before I finally found that out, that it comes from willow bark, for goodness sakes. And aspirin is such a ubiquitous part of our medicine chest that, well, we just have to go to the drugstore and buy some aspirin.
Well, you can, in fact, take capsules of white willow bark and the same thing will happen. But the problem is, when these pharmaceutical companies are breaking down the constituent properties and then patenting them, they are often doing so without compensating the indigenous cultures that did the research, basically, over thousands of years. And also with herbs, there is the prospect of over-harvesting to non-sustainable levels of wildcrafted herbs and things like that. So it's a significant and complicated issue.
It is. One herb that we hear about, and because, well, actually in places like Europe, it never really went away. They use herbs quite openly and proudly.
Actually, the Germans developed, they have developed something, I think it's called the e-book or something, where all of the herbs are actually cataloged for their medicinal. It's a reference that's used all over the world. The German, I believe it's called the e-book, I can't remember. But they have done a really good job of classifying them scientifically and making a database of this.
Ha! Well, one of those herbs that was used for many, many hundreds of years, and now actually it's becoming a bit more popular over here because, well, somebody must be making money out of it. But
not billions of dollars.
Not billions. The efficacy of echinacea, purple coneflower, and being here in the Midwest, purple coneflower is one of those prairie plants that is just absolutely
gorgeous. Beautiful
prairie
plant.
It's gorgeous.
The common ones are purple, but boy, you start to see, mm-hmm. I've seen yellow ones and red ones mm-hmm. and pink mm-hmm. ones in people's gardens. They're just kind. Beautiful.
The purple coneflower, Echinacea augustifolia, it's a big cone with an orange globe on the top with drooping purple leaves around or purple petals around the outside.
Now, drought tolerant. Hello.
Drought tolerant. Yes. Wonderful stuff once it gets started. Underground is what's important here because the root, it builds bioactive compounds for the elements in the soil called alkamides, they produce a tingly and numbing sensation on our tongue, and that can be used for all sorts of things. Many ailments, upper respiratory infections, yeah, inflammation, coughs, colds, huh?
Immune system stimulant,
basically. Echinacea.
But it's the root, folks, not the flowers, not the leaves. So if you have it in your garden, and it is a perennial, mm-hmm. So you would have to have a lot of it to mm-hmm. dig it up and then expect some of it to still come up in the spring.
Also, actually, believe it or not, they're actually doing studies as to not all echinacea is as strong. Of course, you're going to look for the strongest root. There are certain ones that they're breeding for making stronger roots, which is a good thing. So they don't have to harvest all of the native stuff. You can grow echinacea in your garden, and you can grow echinacea commercially, and that is happening more and more. You can find echinacea in your health food store.
Oh, it's in everything anymore.
Yeah.
Any wellness product is going to have a little shot of echinacea in it.
Or supposed to be good for you. Yes, yes. And also, it's a great pollinator plant. Yes, it is. Bees love these things. We talked about red raspberry as being very efficacious. And also, believe it or not, I didn't know this at all. I found out that strawberry leaves are good, rich in vitamins and mineral strawberry leaf tea.
Now, so that would mean you could just pick the leaves, steep them in mm-hmm. in hot water, and then drink the liquid.
Very good.
Yeah.
Good for the cardiovascular system, alleviate stomach aches, nausea, and bloating and diarrhea. Now, that sounds real handy. And strawberry leaves. We're moving into strawberry season.
Easy to identify, and you have them in your garden.
There we go.
And be sure also to remember when you're looking for these plants that you want to use for medicinal. You don't want to pick them from gardens that have been very heavily sprayed with
heaven knows what.
Yes, right. You want a fairly clean product if you're trying to heal yourself from something.
Yeah. Remember that these plants have been with us for a long time, and people have been using them for a long time. Another one that you may find in a garden, or actually it's not hard to grow, German chamomile. It's kind of a little low-growing thing, teeny tiny little daisy-like flowers.
It's relaxing.
It's a relaxing thing. Deals with flatulence, so that may be a handy thing.
Well, it's mild enough. It's often used for babies and children.
It says right here in my list of things, it's applied externally to ease discomfort from chicken pox, diaper rash, and even eye infections.
So it's also one of the main components of that celestial season, the classic sleepy time tea.
Oh, really? Oh,
yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
It's a relaxer. And this stuff just grows.
Do you grow chamomile in your garden?
I don't think I planted any this year, but it does self-season. It does come back. I always find some coming up in the most unlikely places. Little in the cracks on the sidewalk, little edges of things.
Kind of Does it make a good ground cover?
Well, yeah, it does. It does. Maybe not ground cover.
It's low. It's low, right?
Along the edges. Chamomile. That's right. It is sleepy time tea. It is. And yarrow. Yarrow is another thing. Deep green stems. The leaves are multi-fingered and lazy looking.
Feathery.
Used medicinally as an emergency tonic to stimulate healing and combat wound infections. Now, yarrow is something that comes back year after year.
The rabbits don't eat it. Do you use the leaves and the flowers on that one?
See. Active components within the flowering top.
Ah, okay.
Stop an open wound from bleeding. How about that? Ha!
You know, another thing I have in my garden is comfrey, which is also the leaf. If you have a wound or a bruise, I mean, we're not talking about something where you need to go and have stitches at the emergency room, for goodness sake. You've got to use common sense with this. But just take and comfrey leaves are big. You just take them and pound them a little bit, and you can plop them right on the injury, and it does help speed healing.
Yeah, I think the problem with this is, here's all of this stuff around us, and there's references all over. There's all kinds of books, and of course,
lots of herbal books, which is how I learned.
And there's things on the internet, but it's the courage to realize that we are connected to this stuff. We belong here on this earth together, and the plants really will help us out if we let them. I think that's important.
Well, it's really fun to learn this. I mean, obviously you can always go to the health food store and buy a tincture of echinacea or yarrow or like one that I use a lot is Eyebright.
I've heard of that. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. This is very old fashioned, but I have a little glass eye cup, which is this tiny little thing shaped like your eye. Mm-hmm. And I'm very seasonal allergy person. And so I just fill it with water and just put a drop of Eyebright and kind of wash your eye with this. And, you know, it's effective. It's not like taking a 12-hour allergy pill because with herbs, they're, you know, you can have to do it again in 2 or 3 hours. But repetition helps, and
it's gentle.
It is gentle.
Very good. Well, we'll get back to talk more about plants later in the show, and we're going to keep talking about plants.
Wait,
here.
What? You had another one. Was it violet that also had salicylic acid in it?
Oh, yes.
Oh, no, violet was for lymphatic cleansing?
We were surprised. We've been nibbling on violets in our salad for a while. And
oh, yeah, it says medicinal uses are documented everywhere it thrives and usually include soothing irritated tissue and easing inflammation. Violet leaves are a natural source of salicylic acid, the basic ingredient for aspirin, and the spring leaves are high in vitamin C. Taken internally, violet's properties activate lymphatic fluids to disband stagnation and alleviate congested tissues.
That's us.
Sounds like this is good for old folks.
Nibble on a violet leaf, and just knowing what some of these things can do is it'll help you.
But
it'll help.
You have to remember with herbs, they're gentle. So, you know, it's not like taking a pill and you're going to get immediate results. It's something you have to live with and make daily habits with. Like, okay, if I decide I want to do violets, I probably should make a cup of violet tea, maybe morning and evening, and use it for a month or something like that. You need to form a relationship with these people, basically.
The people. You know? Yes.
The people.
Yes. Well, we're not the only ones to depend on plants. We're going to run a little bit of audio here. In the summer of 2019, I talked to Ben Hawks about his research on butterflies and milkweed. Milkweed's a plant.
And he's doing this for the Department of Defense.
Believe it or not.
Yeah.
Yes, he talks about that. Now, climate change is a challenge for all of us creatures, and people are kind of doing these butterfly surveys and finding out. So let's see what Ben Hawks has to say about milkweed.
Well, thinking about how things change, we think about butterflies. I haven't seen a whole lot of butterflies here, and people try to keep track of butterflies and what goes on with them. Here in the Midwest, we kind of look forward to having the monarchs come through. I have not seen one so far.
Right.
Well, I talked to somebody who does know about butterflies, Ben Hawksh, and he kind of let us in on some interesting work that he's doing and about the milkweeds that feed the butterflies.
I'm a forager, and I'm going to be talking to you today about milkweed and monarchs. Yeah, so I am part of a project out at Camp Dodge Military Base, funded through the Department of Defense and Tufts University out of Boston. And out there, I'm part of a three-year study that's looking at disease transfer in monarch butterflies. Everyone's concerned about their overwintering numbers down in Mexico, and some of us have been lucky enough to go down there and see the pine trees covered in living leaves of sorts. I haven't made it myself, but I would love to make it down to Michoacan, to the mountains, to see that. So people are planting milkweed in their yards of various kinds and colors and shapes. Iowa has something like, I want to say 17 or 19 different species of milkweed. We usually think of butterfly weed or common milkweed, the ones with the globe-like purple flowers that get tall, or the butterfly weed that's got the bright orange tops that, your drier or rockier sites. But there are a whole bunch of other ones out there as well. So the study is just kind of looking at how diseases move and if we need to be worried about it or not. So I take a little sticker and I put them on the little butterfly's abdomen and take a little scale sample and see if it's got the presence of or absence of these spores. And I take a little gel pen. I put a couple of colors on their wings, whether it's purple, green, blue, orange. So I know that this one is Mary and the other one is Joe and, how far they've gone that day. I swear it's every five-year-old girl's dream for a job, but I've managed to land it for a couple of summers. We're finding that, at least at Camp Dodge, there's not a lot of this disease to worry about, but it's something that, if we have more habitat, there's more room for butterflies to spread out, and we may not really have to worry about this in the future, but I'm glad to be a part of the study. Now, on top of planting all this milkweed in your yards, if you've listened to the show before, I am an advocate for eating wild food, so this milkweed, common milkweed specifically, is a great wild food to eat. So this season and during this time of year, some of the plants are just starting to make little tiny flowers, and they look like little cauliflower buds that are hanging up towards the top of the tree. They're about the size of a ping pong ball right now. In places that don't get as much sun, they may be a little shorter, and the tops of the plants may be pretty flexible. I guess what I'm trying to say is that this whole plant is edible and pretty good. Early in the season, I'll break off the tops of the plants and strip a couple of the leaves off, so there's just a couple of little ones on top. And you kind of just feel for that rubbery part, like you're harvesting asparagus, and where it snaps is the place that you grab it. You can eat these straight up raw if you want to. They're not too bad. The latex in there doesn't really come through, when you're chewing on them. They may get on your finger and feel a little sticky, but the flavor is very pleasant. They're great sauteed up or grilled just like asparagus. Just be cautious when you get around this time of year to be looking for little caterpillar eggs on the bottom side of the leaves, or little caterpillars themselves, nibbling on them. So maybe avoid those or brush the caterpillars off to another plant. Milkweeds are very resilient. If you break them off, they're going to just sprout right back, and they're probably going to even do better. Especially because milkweeds are a food source the whole season in Iowa. So if you cut down your first crop of milkweed and you let a second one regrow, you're going to be allowing really fresh, vibrant food for butterflies when kind of the other plants are getting a little leathery and a little older, and not as tender for the caterpillars. Now, mentioning these little flower buds again, I like to take those and saute them up. I've also seen them pickled, just like you would a pepper or, you know, a green bean. They have a really nice texture to them, a little bit of a floral taste, a nice chew, and a nice addition to just about anything. Now, even later in the season, when these flowers open up, it's going to be another couple weeks. Make these big globe-like flowers, and they've got these little traps in each one of the little flowers for the butterfly feet to get stuck in. You know, monarchs are members of the brush-footed family of butterflies. So they've got these really sticky hairs on their feet, and if you ever see one on top of the milkweed feeding, them and other insects will actually get their feet stuck inside of the flowers. And when they pull them out, they get covered in these little pollen sacs, and then they help pollinate the other flowers out there. But I go through and I snip off a couple of those flowers for myself because, well, I don't think the monarchs mind sharing with me. And I make cordials with those. So I make a flavored soda with that and a little bit of lemon juice and sugar. And it's a really nice, bright pink, you know, floral tasting beverage for the summer. Beyond that, you know, when I think of milkweeds, if we're looking to plant for monarchs, the research shows that common milkweed is probably the best host plant for butterflies. Maybe not the best nectar source, but definitely the best host plant. So the caterpillars survive the best on the common milkweed. If you have a friend that has a patch, you know, you can get some seeds in the ground, but the easiest way to get it going is just take a shovel to the inside of it in the early spring, grab a couple of those shoots and put them into your garden, because milkweeds spread mostly by roots when they're out in the prairie, although they do make some really beautiful cottony seeds, you know, later in the season.
You mean all of that business up on top with those wonderful flying seeds and that beautiful cone that pops open? That's just all for show. There's a lot of it going on underneath the ground.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, who doesn't do a little bit of something just for show? Yeah, that's probably the best way to get them established. You know, if you see a big patch of milkweed out in a prairie, you know, I usually expect them to be the same individual. You know, like you would see a black locust tree or an aspen grove. It's all roots underground that are just making new shoots. So you're not going to be harming anything by grabbing a little chunk from your neighbor's fence row or, you know, your nearby butterfly garden if you get permission to dig a little piece.
Wonderful things about butterflies and milkweed. And of course, Ben tells me you can eat them too.
That was a talk with Ben Hawks. He knows a lot about milkweed and butterflies and other things too. Always good to talk to Ben. You're listening to KHOI, and this is the Donalana Kitchen, tasty radio for the heart of Iowa. Thank you.
Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. Well, you're talking about the amazing world of plants, and we're just scratching the surface with plants that are just underused, underappreciated, but they're out there. Medicinal. And they're out there doing wonderful things for us if we'd only ask. I've got another news item here from the Donna Lana Kitchen News Department. Tick-a-tick-tick-a-tick-a-tick. Okay. Carl Kurtz is a wonderful photographer and grower of prairies and a documenter of all things in nature. And he has a really nice photograph of a bird in this week's local Ames Tribune paper. And I thought, what a pretty bird. And the bird is called a dickcissel. It is a dickcissel. That's D-I-C-K-C-I-S-S-L-E. Dickcissel. It is a small birdie that likes the prairie. And his picture has got, it must be a male because it's got all kinds of splotches of wonderful, good colors on it.
What kind of colors?
Oh, you know, kind of iridescent blue and a splotch of red. And it's just way too much for a small bird. And then, but the females are a little more bland, of course, and they live out in the prairie. And the call is dickcissel, sissel. Who could not like a bird like that? So three cheers for Carl Kurtz and his ever wonderful photography. Good. Well, let's get back to some more plant stuff. Donna, what do you want to talk about?
Well, one thing, and years ago we had a wonderful New York City herbalist. What was her name?
Anna Chin.
Ava Chin, who really turned us on to the merits of motherwort. And it is ubiquitous around here. It's one of the first sort of weeds that pops up in my garden now that I've discovered how wonderful it is. First of all, I'm always glad to see it because, you know, it's green. And when it starts, it's pretty when it first comes in. It comes in early along with the lovage that pops up early and the garlic chives. But the motherwort starts early. You'll see it throughout the woods. It kind of clumps and mounds. But it's also, it's called motherwort. I would call it a nervine. It's a tonic for your nerves. It calms you down. I like the flavor of it. It's a very distinct flavor. It's not something I probably would put in salads, but you can just go out. I mean, you can certainly buy a tincture of it. It's a well-known herbal commodity, but I like to just go out, pick a few leaves, steep it in the hot water, and drink it. Now, Lana, what did you say the word wart means in German?
Oh, yes. Yeah, you find the word W-O-R-T, wart. It's got the end of, well, there's mugwort and motherwort and St. John's wort. Wart means it's good for you. It's a medicine.
Wart means medicine.
Yeah,
it means the old German. Okay.
Yeah, wort.
So this is a medicine for mothers. Hello.
Yes, it is.
To calm the poor distressed mother down. So it's ubiquitous around here, and it's really pretty, and I'm very happy to have it and just popped up in my garden. So
it is. It's a fine plant to live with.
And you could tincture it yourself, too. You just take a quart jar of vodka and stuff it full of leaves and let it sit until the vodka turns an appropriately dark brownish kind of color. And there you've got your, of course, it's vodka. So vodka,
Donna,
can make you happy too, I suppose, but be careful.
Yeah. Motherwort, it calms one down. See, what a nice thing. And it's pretty too. There's also chickweed. Now gardeners probably are going to complain about chickweed.
What does chickweed look like?
So chickweed is a low growing, grows underneath things. It has many, many runners out from a central point, has teeny tiny little leaves. And always the pictures of it look like it's bigger than it is. I mean, it's right down to the ground. It makes mats. And it's tiny, and it's got tiny little star-shaped flowers.
Are they white?
Whitish with a yellow center.
Huh.
And it spreads and little roundish leaves. And actually,
in the spring, it's nice to munch on it. It's a good thing to eat yourself.
So and that would be a good ground cover under your garden flowers.
It
that
is.
Would maybe
it's
keep
a great,
other
it's a
weeds
great
from
ground
growing
cover.
In.
Yes, it is. And guess who likes chickweed? It's great for baby chicks. It's very easily digestible. And it's a really nice early spring.
And what does
green.
It do medicinally?
Medicinally. Well, I mentioned it in the food. It's in raw and salad. That's lovely. Plant has medicinal properties in folk medicine for pulmonary disease. Uh-huh. And a remedy for mange, if you happen to have your mange. Well, so you got to have some of that, too. For skin diseases, yes, it does soothe the skin if you make a poultice out of it. Skin
diseases. Put that with a little comfrey and
yeah,
you've got
yeah,
something
you
going
got it,
on there,
you got
right?
It treats bruises and aching bones. Who would have thought? Now, anybody who is gardening probably has pulled up a lot of this stuff about, oh, that's just a weed. Well, you can leave it as a ground cover. Well, although it does sort of take over things, especially among lettuce. You want it to get it out of there. But it really is a nice little plant. And its Latin name is Stellaria medea. And the Stellaria, Stella, refers to the star-shaped flowers.
Hmm.
Chickweed. I like chickweed. You want to talk about nettles.
Oh, well, so nettles, we're past the spring nettles. They're now, I mean, you can still eat them, but
they're now early summer
yeah,
nettles.
Yeah, they're probably a lot tougher, but they still make really good, you can make tinctures, you can make teas, you can steep them in water. What I use nettles for, as I said earlier, I have a lot of seasonal allergies, and nettles, stinging nettles are my go-to remedy.
Oh, you fight with the stinging nettles? Huh?
Well, I even buy it and take it by capsule because when other people are taking, their allergy pills, I'm taking stinging nettle capsules. And they don't last as long as an allergy pill, but they're pretty darn effective. So stinging nettles, like you can buy freeze-dried stinging nettles in capsules or you can just pick them and constantly consume them in a tea.
Ah.
But we have a lot of stinging nettles around, particularly out in the woods. I mean, people generally eliminate them from their yard simply because they do sting. You do need to use gloves to pick them. But they're in the woods, they're kind of pretty, and they have a really pronounced medicinal effect that gives you rather immediate relief.
They do. They must be strong because if you go through a patch of nettles with a pair of shorts on, there is a chemical reaction there. Yeah. So you might as well use it for good things. And by putting nettles in boiling water, that takes away the sting. So yeah, you can eat
right,
it.
Right.
Yeah.
You don't want to eat those raw, for goodness
no,
sake.
Heaven knows. Heaven knows. However, they also, early nettles, when they are young yet, they're a pretty good cooked green. Oh, there you go. There you go. One thing that came growing in huge bunches in a short little bit in my field, actually it came up in the old garlic bed last year, is mullein. Mullein. It's a big fuzzy leafed, it sort of looks like tobacco. It's a fuzzy leafed plant that it's a biennial. The first year it just kind of makes this rosette, this ring of lobed leaves coming out, a little lobe plant. The second year, oh boy, this must have been the second year, it set up this flower stalk that maybe as tall as I am. I'm almost 5 feet tall.
That's what those are, with yellow flowers?
With yellow flowers.
Oh, golly, they're just gorgeous, but it takes 2 years, huh?
Well, to get the flowers, mm-hmm. but they seed and it's, okay. It and the leaves are, they call it woolly. It is woolly. It's fuzzy.
Well, and in your garden, it has a really nice texture,
oh,
frankly.
Oh, it's pretty.
It's pretty.
Yeah, you probably don't want a whole, I had a whole row of them, actually. But I pulled up a bunch of those leaves and dried them because, my goodness, there was just so many of them. And you can use them as a tea, too. Native Americans smoke the leaves, huh? Pretty good.
That's right. It's one of those smokable plants.
Yeah, huh? It's a source of yellow hair dye. It treats cold. And they are looking into the uses for asthma, coughs, and tuberculosis, and respiratory problems.
Yeah, it has an affinity for the lungs, as they would say.
Yeah, see, these things that people have known for years, maybe we should just kind of take a look at it. And
well, at the very least, you can try them out, because if you get a free deposit from nature of mullein in your yard, let it go. It's beautiful.
It is.
I might have to let you help me encourage some in my yard.
Okay.
I'd like it.
Yeah.
My neighbor Ingrid Anderson had some, and it was really pretty.
Well, if it grows in her yard, it might grow.
Yeah. In a domestic landscape, it's quite pretty.
Ah,
it takes a lot of sun, of course.
Good. Okay. Of course, I get information in books, and I can look up things on the web, and be careful with this stuff. But like Donna says, herbs are gentle people. They really are. You can't really, I don't like eat nettles raw, but there are things that you can actually gain.
Yeah, and like everything else, be sure you know what you're doing before you eat something. If you have to make sure you correctly identify it, and that you know, there are things out there that you shouldn't be eating. Okay. So.
Yeah. It's amazing what all these wonderful plants can do.
I have a little story.
Oh, good. What?
So I have an old friend from when I used to live in Woodstock, New York, Green McGregor, who is a puppeteer. She has done the Ivy Vine Players for years and years and years, and she's a creative, lots of fun kind of person. And recently she sent me in the mail a package of an herb that she's been exploring out there in the Catskill Mountains, and it's called bog myrtle. She said, Donna, I'm going to send you some, because, of course, it's really hard to describe the flavor of it. And she has a friend who had been brewing his homemade mead and or beers with bog myrtle. So she sent me some in the mail, and I'm sniffing it and looking at it and going, I don't know what to do with this exactly, but... So I thought, all right, I'm just going to put it in some vodka, because let the flavor bloom out. And I did a little historical research. So bog myrtle is traditionally from Scotland, and Grian is of Scottish heritage.
Oh, well,
Grian McGregor, right? And it grows in bogs, wet, boggy areas. And it also grows in the Adirondack Mountains and the upper Catskills, which is, you know, a similar wet, has wet environments in it. And it was used in early ales in the British Isles before they started putting hops in beer and things like that. So it was used as a bittering agent. But it doesn't taste particularly bitter to me.
No, I tasted it too. I would say it tastes tree-like.
Yeah, a little
tiny.
Yeah, a little resiny.
Resiny. Uh-huh. And it has kind of a earth, and it has a really nice aftertaste. I mean, I could see putting it in some beer and things. It is not a hop sort of taste.
No, it's not bitter like that. And I can see why she had to mail it to me, because I still am having trouble. Sorry, you radio folks. I'm having trouble trying to describe the flavor of it. But it was a really fun experiment and a new herb for me.
Very
and
good.
Thanks to Green, we're enjoying it. And now we have a whole quart of bog myrtle vodka to make cocktails with.
Very good. Very good. You're listening to KHOI. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. You can find out more about us at khoifm.org. We've been at this for quite a few years, and there's lots of shows that you can find on our archives, or go to khoifm.org, and you can find all kinds of other wonderful programs there.
Thank you.
Welcome back. That was the banjo playing of Iowa banjo player Bob Black, and the tune was called Nervous Breakdown. Yes, it was. Good job, Bob. Now for something completely different. In our past history of shows, I remember Donna saying, you gotta try new things sometime. Don't always let people tell you what to eat. You try your own, taste your own. And so I was reading this little, let's call this light summer reading, and I just found this humorous little bit here. The author is Robert Fulghum. He is the author of All I Really Needed to Know I Learned in Kindergarten. And this is from his book called Uh-Oh, Some Observations from Both Sides of the Refrigerator Door.
This is a classic book. I think even my mother read this
one. Oh, yeah. It's good. It's good. So he talks about feeding time, about eating, and he gives no apologies here. This is Robert Fulghum. I think of 2 a.m. is feeding time, the time when you've had some of the best meals I've ever eaten. Gourmet eating, alone, with nobody standing around saying, you're not really going to eat that, are you? One memorable midnight I put away a taco shell full of almond paste and washed it down with a can of Snappy Tom. Huh? Follow that with some celery sticks, limp enough to tie granny knots in, and then I ate a whole dish of tapioca pudding that I picked up out of the bowl in one piece. It'll work. The last inch from a bottle of red wine made way for a scoop of cold chili smeared on rye bread and topped with fig jam, a spoonful of peanut butter and a spoonful of jam every now and then to clear the palate, a couple glasses of milk to keep things moving on down. Finally, a cup of dead coffee, revive it in the microwave, and went out on the porch and smoked the remaining half of a cigar I hadn't finished before I went to bed. That was a great meal, he said. That was a truly great meal. And then he has a few thoughts on on spam. Another dead of the night dining extravaganza happened because I sat up late reading the White Trash Cookbook. Here's a recipe for rack of spam. Take a can of spam and you butterfly the loaf, which means slicing it in thin sections without cutting it all the way through. Then you bend the spam open so you can stick pieces of pineapple in them, huh? For garnish, top the top of it with some peanut butter and a few maraschino cherries. Stick that baby in the microwave for about 4 minutes. Open a box of saltine crackers. Get a quart of milk. Drink it right from the carton. Take your time and eat it all. You can't get a meal like this in a French restaurant, but I've seldom eaten better. Oh, little talk on. Well, you know, we're like that.
That goes along with the don't yuck on my yum. You know, to each his own. And my mother would say, there's no accounting for taste.
That's true. That is true. Yeah, there's things in our. I happen to like cold pizza. That's a good refrigerator thing. And yeah, also, I found on the internet, this comes from the New York Times. It must be good.
Okay. I'm going to try this one. This is from Ferran Adria. Okay, so he is best known as like the top chef in Spain. He did the Ibuli restaurant, which is the beyond of gastronomic inventiveness. I think it's a lot of boy toy stuff that he's doing, but he is a big deal. And here he is in the New York Times advocating for, tell us about this recipe.
Oh, this guy must stand in front of his refrigerator too late at night.
Yes.
Okay.
So,
this is called the potato chip omelet. And you say, oh, that's horrible. Well, when you think about it, you got your salt, you got your potatoes, and you got your eggs. There's really nothing else in it. And I cook it in olive oil in a pan on the stove.
That's right. So it's just eggs and potato chips and olive oil.
Yeah. Ah, it is pepper if you want. See?
So he's got 12 large eggs. That's a lot.
That's a lot of eggs.
That's a lot. You got to cut this down. With 6 cups. So it looks like about a half a cup of potato chip per egg.
Yeah.
I'm going to try it. And, of course, you could choose your flavor of potato
chip. Oh, I thought of that. Mix it up and kind of, as you pour it in the pan, kind of poke it around so the potato chips aren't all clogged up in one place. And cook it like you would a regular almond. Now, see, we're moving into summer, and we're moving in. We want some easy things to do. A potato chip omelet sounds good.
And I would venture to say that this is probably the most approachable, accessible recipe that has ever come out of this man. So it might be worth a try. It kind of sounds like fun, and I think children might enjoy this.
Yeah. Why not? See, you want to make food that you like. It's good to have food that you like.
Sounds easy enough anyway.
Yeah, it does. It does. That's great. Well, another news item that I recently ran across, thinking of people eating across the Atlantic Ocean, and this was from Rome, and you say, oh, Italian food, how lovely, the Mediterranean diet. The latest thing to hit Rome are pizza vending machines.
Yeah, well, the article that I read about it, because it is newsworthy.
Oh, newsworthy.
It's inconclusive yet with it will actually be widely accepted by the public.
I would think so, too. There was a picture of this rather elderly gentleman holding his pizza and sort of looking at it like it was
a novelty.
And not really, yeah.
Yeah.
So it said that the pizzas from the vending machines are ready in 3 minutes. Well, I'm willing to wait a little bit longer for a human being to make my pizza.
Well, plus, you know, I imagine there are very few places in Italy where there's not readily available really good pizza and from many venues. So
yeah, as we come out of this COVID situation, let's kind of celebrate human beings again. They can take their vending machines and just kind of go away, I think. But that was
who knows? Some people may like it. It could be a success. That reminds me. There is a new enterprise in Ames, which looks like it's a national chain. I haven't really looked it up.
But good.
But some of my friends have ordered from this. It's a delivered product of hot cookies. Yeah, I know. You think, well, it only takes a few minutes, even if you're using a package dough or something, you know. But
hot cookies.
This is a new business. Probably going on in towns that have large campuses.
Oh yeah, I suppose.
Because you can order them delivered late at night.
Order hot cookies late. Well, I feel sorry for the delivery person. I mean, it's one thing to deliver with the smell of pizza. But, oh, my goodness, here's your hot cookies, ma'am. Oh, boy.
Well, it smelled okay, and it's a much smaller box. So.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
See, if there is a void, someone will jump in and fill it. Good.
Or create a new need.
Oh, right. Who knew? Well, we're going to talk about plants today, and herbs, and medicinal plants. Yeah.
We can do that.
In future shows, we're going to look into some water issues, but stay tuned. We're going to be doing different things coming up in the summer here.
We'll have a visit from Mary Swander soon, too.
Oh, Mary Swander. Yeah, very good. Yeah, and we kind of got interested because the water protectors in northern Minnesota are once again on the front lines trying to protect water up there from all the rest of us, from the pipelines. So stay tuned to that. You have been listening to the Donalana Kitchen. And we gather here once a week. We're live Tuesday at noon, but we are repeated 7 p.m. on Tuesday evening on air. Or you can go to www.khoifm.org and you can find all kinds of things to listen to besides us. We had music today by Bob Black. He lives over in North English, is that right? Iowa. Over on the East Coast there, somebody, and he has a fine banjo. We're going out with the Flowers of Edinburgh, staying with the herb theme here, Flowers of Edinburgh. Thank you for joining us today. My name is Lana Noctico.
And I'm Donna Prezintas.
We had excellent engineering by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life.